Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast, a place to talk all things software and technology. I'm your host, Ben Popper, Director of Content here at Stack Overflow. And today I'm going to be chatting with Keith Babbo, who is the VP of Product over at Solo.io. Keith was formerly at Red Hat and has been giving some talks this year focused on the keys to AI security and the use of API gateways. So without further ado, Keith, welcome to the Stack Overflow podcast.
Hey, Ben. Great to be here. And thanks for having me on.
For sure. So give folks just that quick, 10,000 foot flyover. How'd you get into the world of software and technology, and what led you to the position you're at today?
Most of my career still to this point has been in development and engineering. When I got out of school, I worked at Intel and working on the software that ran their distribution centers, and ultimately got into electronic data interchange, which is basically how you exchange these business documents over the public internet. Well, originally through these things called VANs that were like dial-up, very antiquated, but eventually became over the internet. And then transitioned to Sun Microsystems during the birth of Java and all this like cool stuff that was going on there. Ultimately found myself at Red Hat, got really into open source community and secure software supply chain and these types of things. And that led me here to Solo. Along that journey, I went from being an engineer and creating my own open source project and stuff and products around that to transitioning into a product role that allowed me to get better visibility across the entire business. You know, not just on the creation of the software, but how the software gets in the hands of a customer and creates value for a customer, which has been a lot of fun.
Nice. So I just want to go back. I am old enough to have had a dial-up modem. You said VANs was a way of transmitting data pre-digital?
Yes. This is the very beginning of my career, not to date myself too much here. But like basically you go to a customer, they would have a modem, it was a bi-sync modem. So unlike it was a bi-directional modem, basically.
Right.
And yeah, they would basically dial up to a provider that basically had a huge phone banks, right? And basically would take these electronic documents and just store them in servers in the value-added network is what this like phone bank provider was called. Mm. They would charge you by the kilocharacter, which was crazy. Like the amount of money they printed from that business is just insane. And it's one of those things that we continuously see over the course of our careers where you have something that's throwing off a ton of money, right? These people are insanely profitable and it's just ripe for disruption. And the internet, disrupted that big time.
All right. So let's focus a little bit on what you've been doing recently. I don't know everything about Solo, the company you're at now, but I understand a little bit about the need for security in, the world of generative AI or like AI services. So, obviously for a lot of these, what people are doing are turning to large companies that have frontier foundational models, something that they can't recreate in-house. And so, when they want their chatbot to respond or they want, their enterprise search to run, they're accessing via API, service from Microsoft, IBM, Amazon, OpenAI, Google. I could probably name a few more. What are the unique, security risks inherent in using an API as a way to interact with these AI and generative AI services, versus, API for other cloud services?
So it's inherent in actually, it's not so much that there's anything uniquely different about an API presenting as an API, no matter where it lives, and more about the content that's getting generated and what you're sending and control over what you're sending to that provider. As you mentioned, it's quite uncommon for companies outside of Anthropic, OpenAI, Azure, Google, AWS, to basically train models, like the amount of money that goes into training those models.
Right.
You might do fine tuning, and this type of thing, but to train a model from scratch is pretty expensive. So most companies are turning to models that are hosted externally. And in that case, then it becomes this issue of, what are the trust boundaries for that, right? How am I actually securing the communication to talk to the provider? How am I handling credential management for API keys in that provider? How am I enriching that content with like function calling or RAG and this type of thing? So what is really interesting is that all of the normal mechanics of securing API communication that you want, authentication, authorization, transport encryption, all of these things apply to LLMs just like they do for normal APIs. But there are very specific risks and capabilities around AIs and embedding LLMs via API in applications that create the need for a more specialized type of API gateway, which is an AI gateway.
Right. Putting this into context of you work at a company that's developing some proprietary technology, but you know, you also are calling on an AI over an API to help you with code generation or to provide you, you know, with test or documentation for your code. And so now, to your point, you know, what are you sharing in there, if anything, that maybe you don't want other folks to get access to? Let's take that as an example. In what way, you know, would your company or any company design an API gateway to help obfuscate that data, or, you know, what kind of solutions exist to ensure, right, that you can get the value out of the Gen AI, whether that be, you know, some code gen or debugging or documentation, but try to, you know, de-risk the idea that some code or documentation you don't want in the public spills out there.
Yeah. So there's actually, on both sides, there's a requirement for governance. So first, on the prompt request and the prompt going to the LLM, what controls are you implementing to basically ensure and protect against either, you know, malicious and deliberate exploitation or accidental, basically, right?
Right.
So classes in there would be things like a prompt management. So being able to basically say, okay, I've received, you know, if I'm asking questions that I know, if there's patterns or specific keywords that I should never allow, then I can basically just reject those directly in the gateway, basically. So I just shut it off at the front door.
Gotcha.
I can also enrich via prompt management the context around that LLM API request. So the user is passing me like a user prompt, right? Like, what's Ben's favorite color, right? But then I can actually append a system or a system prompt in the gateway that augments that to give certain guardrails and rules of what the LLM is allowed to respond with, which becomes another layer of defense. And that can get quite advanced. You can actually use like other guardrails to actually look and do more semantic reasoning over that request to see if it fits key like exploit characteristics. And that's all on the way to the LLM, basically, right? On the way back from the LLM, then you're looking at doing sort of like data filtering, data loss prevention, data masking controls. Because if I say to the LLM, like, what are three fun facts about Ben? The LLM could respond with, one of those facts is your social security number, because it's trying to be helpful, right? But, you know, so I'm not deliberately trying to fish for your social security number, but it could just be out there, right?
Yeah, you make a great point. So like, I was focused on sort of like a trade secret kind of thing, or the idea of like a security key getting out, a secret getting out from code. Now you're mentioning, right, PII, right? So this is a really interesting one. Obviously, GDPR takes this super seriously. And so all companies, you know, strive to find ways to comply with those rules as best they can. So you're saying, right, both on the way out and the way in, you might do some prompt engineering that says, you know, don't share this. Like if, yeah, every time you see SSN, you know, like colon, don't, you know, don't do that. And anytime you see it coming back, like strip that out as well.
Yes, exactly. And again, there can be very explicit things that we state in the policy for the gateway.
Right.
But then also, you can really effectively leverage the power of the natural language processing in the LLM itself with those like system and assistant contexts or prompts to basically tap on and say, basically, hey, these are the ground rules for how you're going to satisfy this request. And I will say that like the gateway here, the AI gateway, can operate in a number of roles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So far, we've been talking, I'm thinking about it for a forward proxy or egress use case. So I have an application that's consuming a remote LLM, basically, and the AI gateway can be in the network path for that, right? But if I'm in an environment where I'm serving or basically supporting model inferencing and I'm taking inbound traffic, the AI gateway can sit in front of that as well. And there's a whole other set of, you know, security controls and attack vectors for that. Likewise, even for training, if I do end up in a situation where I'm training a model or I'm using technologies like RAG or function calling around that model, then I can use an AI gateway to enforce what it's allowed to talk to, like what APIs and data sources and what it's not allowed to talk to. So there's multiple deployment patterns here.
Right. You build a RAG system internally so that when somebody has questions about how to set up their local dev environment, it doesn't just pull it from training on the internet, it pulls it from, you know, the documentation and FAQ and wiki inside of your company. So walk me through, right, like how you would work with the RAG system so that you can both get the most out of the LLM that's who's ever on the frontier benchmark for reasoning this week, but also, you know, not be sharing stuff out of, you know, internal HR documents and, you know, company policies.
I think that the market is still coming to terms about where this is going to live, okay? But like in this basically end-to-end pipeline, there's three participants, if we assume we're using an AI gateway as well, okay? There's the client application, okay, which can use client-side frameworks like LangChain and others for like RAG, basically, right? Mm. And other enrichments.
Right.
There's the provider, which also supports RAG, like some form of fine-tuning and function calling as well. And then there's the AI gateway that can sit in the middle. And so where do I want to do this? Where do I want to exercise, like taking RAG as an example, right? And there's different advantages and disadvantages. In the provider, if I use the provider in the RAG, then I'm basically giving the provider access to my content stores that I'm going to use for RAG, which may or may not be okay. The data is going to the LLM provider anyway. So, you know, that's a trust decision for every company, but it's not portable across providers. So you're going to wire up that RAG pipeline across every provider. If you do it in the application, you could argue that's undifferentiated heavy lifting for that application developer to implement a RAG pipeline. And certainly if I'm a platform team and like an AI, you know, governance team, I'm worried about what those teams are using as data sources. Because as you pointed out, like if I just get any content repository, if I go to, you know, Wikipedia or just any internet source, like RAG poisoning is a real thing, basically, and it's not hard to pull off. And so I could, you know, inadvertently pull in poison data, which then obviously, you know, greatly influences what I'm returning. The AI gateway gives you a point to implement a RAG pipeline directly. So we can basically calculate an embedding on the prompt request, then go to a vector store and basically pull out relevant content and then send that upstream as context to the LLM provider. The nice thing about that is it's portable across all providers, takes that lift of the RAG pipeline off the developer, and allows me to basically tightly control what content sources are used for that RAG pipeline.
Yeah, I remember discussing on the podcast a story about a certain, you know, library, which originally was just a hallucination that, you know, one of the AI services loved to offer up in its coding suggestions. And so some smart folks went out and created that said library. And then, like you said, you know, injected some nefarious stuff in there. So, right, I guess, what did you call it? RAG poisoning? Or like, you know, the idea of like, you know, trying to figure out where on the web it may be calling from, and then, you know, getting ahead of that and injecting something in there is definitely an interesting concern that, yeah, that's a fresh thing to me, right? Like, I'm not sure we had to think about that before generative AI, or at least, you know, SEO was kind of that. I mean, SEO is, you know, can be gross, right? Like, why am I pulling up and serving up this web page versus that web page? And, you know, like, am I actually serving up something high quality or low quality? But, you know, the idea that you are injecting something into what will then become, you know, a prompt response is pretty novel.
The security characteristics of this, some of them are so new and so fascinating. And like, you know, kind of going back to the beginning, we talked about my history. When I went to Sun Microsystems, like experience of working with EDI at Intel, I basically built a component, a product that did AS2 and AS1, which is basically like EDI over the internet, basically over HTTP, right? And that was my first real experience. There's an implicit security in that whole VAN model. Like if I have a private telephone line and I'm sending this to a secure storage, and they're like, there's like, you know, like kind of physical security aspect of that, I guess, right? But like when you scale that to the internet, now you have other problems basically, right? That it's basically untrusted network and you have to really account for attackers and man in the middle and this type of thing.
Yeah.
And like these protocols really opened my eyes to security and how it's this glorious onion of like you understand one layer and you peel it and there's another layer right underneath it and there's another one under that.
Right.
And like, I love that about like asymmetric cryptography and like, you know, Diffie-Hellman exchanging a key in the open on the internet, right? Like these are such hard problems to solve and they take so much iteration. And we're seeing the same thing play out right now in the community around LLMs, whether it's prompt hijacking, prompt injection, you know, RAG poisoning, and the academic research around that and just kind of the anecdotal examples of like people doing funny things. It's fascinating to me.
Right. So, you know, it looks like the API gateway, you know, is meant to do a number of different things, right? Like it's not just about safety, but it can also be about cost control. You know, it can also be about handling, you know, traffic, you know, as it spikes. So what are the things that the API gateway your company offers does, and how do those sort of sit within, you know, the layers of service of an API gateway to a large customer?
Yeah, so this is a fascinating area. One of the great things that I just love being in product and also working, you know, for startups that have very close relationships, you know, with customers. We have a very popular API gateway, basically, that just does API managed, so security, observability, traffic control, resiliency for all types of APIs, right?
Right.
That's based on Envoy Proxy, which is kind of the leading cloud native proxy that, you know, companies born in the web kind of created and is the leading proxy for Kubernetes. So we're very successful with that product, but we have this great design relationship and partnership with our customers. And so when our customers start to see new use cases where we can be used, they tell us and we kind of work together on it, which is a fun dynamic. So we had a very large customer that basically was starting to get, like all companies right now, investing heavily in AI, finding their way in terms of what the use cases were and this type of thing.
Right.
Governance became like a really big deal. Like the team, the platform teams that are going to own this and run these apps in production. At the end of the day, when an exploit comes, when it's unavailable, right? Like when there's a security breach, they're deeply involved in that, right? So they're thinking, how do we take a platform approach to addressing some of these concerns? And so this customer came to us, we said like, hey, you know, like you can use our existing gateway. It's just an API, like an LLM API is just an API. Just use it for that. And they like started to come out with us like, no, but like it's unique in this area and we're trying to do this thing. And we're like, oh, those are actually really cool sort of extensions to what we do. So even though the foundation of our AI gateway is our API gateway, there are very specific features we built for AI gateway use cases. One thing that's immediately useful and is the key use case, that's actually just an API gateway use case thing, but it's a key thing in Gen AI consumption right now, is going into a provider, creating an API key, and then just sharing that amongst all apps that are basically consuming that model, you know, in that provider. Like there are so many problems, you know, with that as a security approach. Like, you know, the first and foremost is the developer sees that key and then leaves the company. What is your key rotation policy for that? What's the blast radius of that, right? If that inadvertently gets checked, forget about someone leaving. If it gets checked into a GitHub repo, basically, now what do I need to unwind and how do I rotate that key? Like it's crazy, right? And so like one of the first things we help customers with is like, listen, you go create your API keys in the upstream providers. You put them in a secure vault, like HashiVault, for example. You only let the AI gateway see those. Then the AI gateway can give keys, like mint its own API keys that it gives to clients, or it can basically integrate with JOTS or OAuth, OIDC for those flows,
right,
and then just map it to that provider, right? Instantly solves like a very serious problem with basically, you know, least permission, like privileged permission principle, right? And like kind of just, you know, what the blast radius is of a key getting exploited. The other thing is that like, if you look at how we would actually associate permissions for a given team, like it's not fine grained. You have an API key, you can access a provider and a model. We allow you to basically get very fine grained about you're this client app, you need to contact this provider, or you can have access to this provider and this specific model. And then we can enforce things like rate limiting. So like instead of having everybody overwhelm your upstream LLM API and get 429s back from the provider, we can basically do back pressure and bulkheading inside the gateway to basically protect those upstream models and push back on clients in their consumption. And that's all based on the ability to reason about individual clients in the AI gateway.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting the depth and breadth of things that you're packing into, and I maybe I'm wrong, a single API gateway, but like prompt guard is one thing. Okay, we talked about credential management, but then prompt enriching, like I'm enriching a prompt so that the response is better and maybe they, you know, use fewer tokens, you know, rate limiting. Maybe you have these days, like you've set a team of AI agents up to do, you know, a job and they're working night and day and they keep requesting tokens until they get to the bottom of this. You know, that might be more expensive than you had planned for, right?
It's so funny you bring that up because there's multiple things you just said that I want to like double click on. But one that I haven't heard people talk about enough, but the two things I was going to say are related. So when we talk about governance around Gen AI consumption, a huge theme in the industry right now is having a human in the loop, basically. I'm not allowing an agent to basically create code, you know, build an image and then deploy it and run it on its own, basically. That's like way too close to Terminator for most people right now, basically, right?
Right.
Likewise, a lot of companies that are using like a copilot for customer service reps, they're not exposing that LLM directly to their customers. Mm. The CSR is in the middle, that they're the human in the loop, basically. But you raised a very interesting point there around like we will get, and some companies are implementing this already, but we will get to agentic architectures where there are autonomous agents producing this. Right now, we're sort of governed by the pace of humans to like create new things and consume things, but that's about to scale up in a really big way. And you have to think about that in the scale of your architecture.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, I've seen some really incredible stories about content creators and influencers where they make a lot of their money doing fan service, you know, chatting with people or sending them pictures or, you know, doing live events. And it's hard to maintain that, you know, across one human to 10 or 15 other humans a day. But if you build a great agent that, you know, can hold up its end of a chat, suddenly you can talk to 1,000 fans a day and people are, you know, seeing, you know, unbelievable jump in the number of, you know, people they can interact with and thus in the amount of money they can earn.
Totally. And this is like a major pet peeve of mine or like soapbox topic about the human in the loop, because the promise of Gen AI is that it frees humans to, like, it takes the really pedestrian work, right? Allows us to focus on higher value work. Mm-hmm. And this concept of human in the loop is like, hey, I have someone that can basically vet the output from an LLM, determine that it's correct, and then allow it to flow through the process, right?
Right.
But we know from pretty like well-published research at this point that the people that benefit most from Gen AI are the least experienced folks. They get the most productivity benefit from integrating with a co-pilot, right?
Right.
But they can't be the human in the loop because they don't know anything. Basically, otherwise, they'd be an expert, basically, right?
Right, right.
So we have to, when we talk about these security and like vetting the responses from LLMs and security controls, we have to find a way to take what those experts know, encode that into sort of like automated platform processing.
Right.
You know, that's a lot of the work we do in the AI gateway that allows you to then introduce less experienced humans into the loop and then get productivity benefits from it. So,
yeah, I will say of the podcasts and blogs and newsletters we published, you know, something that has gotten a lot of audience attention recently is like, you know, wither the junior dev. And like you're saying, for somebody who's experienced in running a team, you know, maybe an AI agent feels like a junior dev who can create something for them that has a few bugs and needs a few tweaks before, you know, the pull request is approved. But hey, like the work got done. Now that junior dev would have benefited greatly from, you know, doing a pair programming with the AI, but they're not going to know when something's wrong, right?
Right.
So like now you just have two agents, one human, one not, who are producing the same content, right? They're not necessarily improving on one another. So that is a really interesting question of like in the world of software development, what should new students who are exiting college focus on if AI agents and code assistants are kind of at their level, you know, an S1 sort of software developer?
So I'm feeling this right now, by the way. My daughter's in college. She's a sophomore in college. And her whole life, I've told her, like, from my background, I'm like, computer science, easy money, do it. It's great, amazing. And it's a fun job, right? It's great.
Right.
And now I'm like, I'm not so sure, right? You know, it's, I think there's going to be, even in her term in college, there's going to be a tremendous amount of change there very, very rapidly. I think that human reasoning is still very valuable and will be an important part of this process for some time.
All right, everybody. It is that time of the show. We want to shout out somebody who came on Stack Overflow and helped to spread a little knowledge or curiosity. Congrats to Mr. Simple Mind, awarded the Populist badge 2 days ago, providing an answer, how to run JQ from Git Bash in Windows. If you don't know, the Populist Bash is when you come in and provide an answer to a question that already has an accepted answer, but people love your answer even more than the accepted answer because it's that good. So congrats to Simple Mind on the badge, and thanks for sharing an additional perspective on this question. I am Ben Popper. I'm the director of content here at Stack Overflow. Find me on X at Ben Popper. If you want to come on the show or you want to hear us talk about certain things, you can email us, podcast@stackoverflow.com. And if you liked what you heard today, why don't you do me a favor and subscribe?
My name is Keith Babel. I'm the head of product at solo.io. You can find me on LinkedIn if you have any questions about what we discussed today. You can find solo.io at a very surprising web address of solo.io. So if you want to learn more about AI gateways, we have some great labs and instructional materials on that.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you soon.